Chapter 76. On the day Mrs. Gould was going, in Dr. Monaghan's words, to give a tertulia, Captain Fidanza went down the side of his schooner lying in Sulaco Harbor, calm, unbending, deliberate in the way he sat down in his dinghy and took up his sculls. He was later than usual. The afternoon was well advanced before he landed on the beach of the Great Isabel and with a steady pace climbed the slope of the island. From a distance he made out Cassell sitting in a chair tilted back against the end of the house, under the window of the girl's room. She had her embroidery in her hands and held it well up to her eyes. The tranquility of that girlish figure exasperated the feeling of perpetual struggle and strife he carried in his breast. He became angry. It seemed to him that she ought to hear the clanking of his fetters, his silver fetters, from afar. And while ashore that day, he had met the doctor with the evil eye, who had looked at him very hard. The raising of her eyes mollified him. They smiled in their flower-like freshness straight upon his heart. Then she frowned. It was a warning to be cautious. He stopped some distance away, and in a loud, indifferent tone, said, "Good day, Cassell. Is Linda up yet?" "Yes. She is in the big room with Father." He approached then, and, looking through the window into the bedroom for fear of being detected by Linda returning there for some reason, he said, moving only his lips, "You love me? More than my life." She went on with her embroidery under his contemplating gaze and continued to speak, looking at her work, "Or I could not live. I could not, Giovanni. For this life is like death. Oh, Giovanni, I shall perish if you do not take me away." He smiled carelessly. I will come to the window when it's dark," he said. "No, don't, Giovanni. Not tonight. Linda and Father have been talking together for a long time today." "What about?" "Ramirez, I fancy I heard. I do not know. I am afraid. I am always afraid. It is like dying 1,000 times a day. Your love is to me like your treasure to you. It is there, but I can never get enough of it." He looked at her very still. She was beautiful. His desire had grown within him. He had two masters now. But she was incapable of sustained emotion. She was sincere in what she said, but she slept placidly at night. When she saw him, she flamed up always. Then only an increased taciturnity marked the change in her. She was afraid of betraying herself. She was afraid of pain, of bodily harm, of sharp words, of facing anger, and witnessing violence. For her soul was light and tender with a pagan sincerity in its impulses. She murmured, "Give up the palazzo, Giovanni, and the vineyard on the hills, for which we are starving our love." She ceased, seeing Linda standing silent at the corner of the house. Nostromo turned to his affianced wife with a greeting, and was amazed at her sunken eyes, at her hollow cheeks, at the air of illness and anguish in her face. "Have you been ill?" he asked, trying to put some concern into this question. Her black eyes blazed at him. "Am I thinner?" she asked. "Yes, perhaps a little." "And older? Every day counts for all of us." "I shall go gray, I fear, before the ring is on my finger," she said, slowly, keeping her gaze fastened upon him. She waited for what he would say, rolling down her turned-up sleeves. "No fear of that," he said, absently. She turned away, as if it had been something final, and busied herself with household cares, while Nostromo talked with her father. Conversation with the old Garibaldino was not easy. Age had left his faculties unimpaired, only they seemed to have withdrawn somewhere deep within him. His answers were slow in coming, with an effect of august gravity. But that day he was more animated, quicker, there seemed to be more life in the old lion. He was uneasy for the integrity of his honor. He believed Sidoni's warning as to Ramirez's designs upon his younger daughter. And he did not trust her. She was flighty. He said nothing of his cares to Angai and Batista. It was a touch of senile vanity. He wanted to show that he was equal yet to the task of guarding alone the honor of his house. Nostromo went away early. As soon as he had disappeared, walking towards the beach, Linda stepped over the threshold and, with a haggard smile, sat down by the side of her father. Ever since that Sunday, when the infatuated and desperate Ramirez had waited for her on the wharf, she had no doubts whatever. The jealous ravings of that man were no revelation. They had only fixed with precision, as with a nail driven into her heart, that sense of unreality and deception which, instead of bliss and security, she had found in her intercourse with her promised husband. She had passed on, pouring indignation and scorn upon Ramirez. But, that Sunday, she nearly died of wretchedness and shame, lying on the carved and lettered stone of Teresa's grave, subscribed for by the engine drivers and the fitters of the railway workshops, in sign of their respect for the hero of Italian unity. Old Viola had not been able to carry out his desire of burying his wife in the sea, and Linda wept upon the stone. The gratuitous outrage appalled her. If he wished to break her heart, well and good. Everything was permitted to Guy and Batista. But why trample upon the pieces? Why seek to humiliate her spirit? Aha! He could not break that. She dried her tears. And Giselle, the little one that, ever since she could toddle, had always clung to her skirt for protection. What duplicity! But she could not help it, probably. When there was a man in the case, the poor feather-headed wretch could not help herself. Linda had a good share of the Viola stoicism. She resolved to say nothing. But womanlike, she put passion into her stoicism. Giselle's short answers, prompted by fearful caution, drove her beside herself by their curtness that resembled disdain. One day she flung herself upon the chair in which her indolent sister was lying, and impressed the mark of her teeth at the base of the whitest neck in Sulaco. Giselle cried out. But as he had her share of the Viola heroism, ready to faint with terror, she only said, in a lazy voice, "Madre de Dios, are you going to eat me alive, Linda?" And this outburst passed off, leaving no trace upon the situation. He knows nothing. She cannot know anything, reflected Giselle. P. Perhaps it is not true. It cannot be true, Linda tried to persuade herself. But when she saw Captain Fidanza for the first time after her meeting with the distracted Ramirez, the certitude of her misfortune returned. She watched him from the doorway, go away to his boat, asking herself stoically, will they meet tonight? She made up her mind not to leave the tower for a second. When he had disappeared, she came out and sat down by her father. The venerable Garibaldino felt, in his own words, a young man yet. In one way or another, a good deal of talk about Ramirez had reached him of late, and his contempt and dislike of that man who obviously was not what his son would have been, had made him restless. He slept very little now, but for several nights past, instead of reading or only sitting, with Mrs. Gould's silver spectacles on his nose, before the open Bible, he had been prowling actively all about the island with his old gun, on watch over his honor. Linda, laying her thin brown hand on his knee, tried to soothe his excitement. Ramirez was not in Sulaco. Nobody knew where he was. He was gone. His talk of what he would do meant nothing. No, the old man interrupted. Be but son Guy and Batista told me quite of himself, that the cowardly esclavo was drinking and gambling with the rascals of Zapiga, over there on the north side of the gulf. He may get some of the worst scoundrels of that scoundrelly town of Negroes to help him in his attempt upon the little one. But I am not so old. No. She argued earnestly against the probability of any attempt being made, and at last the old man fell silent, chewing his white mustache. Women had their obstinate notions which must be humored. His poor wife was like that, and Linda resembled her mother. It was not seemly for a man to argue. Maybe, he mumbled. She was by no means easy in her mind. She loved Nostromo. She turned her eyes upon Giselle, sitting at a distance, with something of maternal tenderness, and the jealous anguish of a rival outraged in her defeat. Then she rose and walked over to her. "Listen, you," she said, roughly. The invincible candor of the gaze raised up all Violet and Dew, excited a rage and admiration. As he had beautiful eyes, the chica, this vile thing of white flesh and black deception. She did not know whether she wanted to tear them out with shouts of vengeance or cover up their mysterious and shameless innocence with kisses of pity and love. And suddenly they became empty, gazing blankly at her, except for a little fear not quite buried deep enough with all the other emotions in Giselle's heart. Linda said, "Ramirez is boasting in town that he will carry you off from the island." "What folly," answered the other, and in a perversity born of long restraint, she added, "Colon, he is not the man," in a jesting tone with a trembling audacity. "No?" said Linda, through her clenched teeth. "Is he not? Well then, look to it, because father has been walking about with a loaded gun at night. It is not good for him. You must tell him not to, Linda. He will not listen to me." "I shall say nothing never any more to anybody," cried Linda, passionately. This could not last, thought Giselle. Guyav and I must take her away soon the very next time he came. She would not suffer these terrors for ever so much silver. To speak with her sister made her ill. But she was not uneasy at her father's watchfulness. She had begged Nostromo not to come to the window that night. He had promised to keep away for this once. And she did not know, could not guess or imagine, that he had another reason for coming on the island. Linda had gone straight to the tower. It was time to light up. She unlocked the little door and went heavily up the spiral staircase, carrying her love for the magnificent Capitis de Cargadores like an ever-increasing load of shameful fetters. No, she could not throw it off. No, let heaven dispose of these two. And moving about the lantern, filled with twilight and the sheen of the moon, with careful movements she lighted the lamp. Then her arms fell along her body. And with our mother looking on, she murmured, "Why own sister the chica?" The whole refracting apparatus, with its brass fittings and rings of prisms, glittered and sparkled like a domishoped shrine of diamonds, containing not a lamp, but some sacred flame, dominating the sea. And Linda, the keeper, in black, with a pale face, drooped low in a wooden chair, alone with her jealousy, far above the shames and passions of the earth. A strange, dragging pain, as if somebody were pulling her about brutally by her dark hair with bronze glints, made her put her hands up to her temples. They would meet. They would meet. And she knew where to. At the window. The sweat of torture fell in drops on her cheeks, while the moonlight in the offing closed, as if with a colossal bar of silver, the entrance of the placid gulf, the somber cavern of clouds and stillness in the surf-fretted seaboard. Linda Viola stood up suddenly with a finger on her lip. He loved neither her nor her sister. The whole thing seemed so objectless as to frighten her and also give her some hope. Why did he not carry her off? What prevented him? He was incomprehensible. What were they waiting for? For what end were these two lying and deceiving? Not for the ends of their love. There was no such thing. The hope of regaining him for herself made her break her vow of not leaving the tower that night. She must talk at once to her father, who was wise, and would understand. She ran down the spiral stairs. At the moment of opening the door at the bottom, she heard the sound of the first shot ever fired on the Great Isabel. She felt a shock, as though the bullet had struck her breast. She ran on without pausing. The cottage was dark. She cried at the door, "Giselle! Giselle!" Then dashed around the corner and screamed her sister's name at the open window, without getting an answer. But as she was rushing, distracted, round the house, Giselle came out of the door and darted past her, running silently, her hair loose, and her eyes staring straight ahead. She seemed to skim along the grass, as if on tiptoe, and vanished. Linda walked on slowly, with her arms stretched out before her. All was still on the island. She did not know where she was going. The tree under which Martin Decad spent his last days, beholding life like a succession of senseless images, threw a large blotch of black shade upon the grass. Suddenly she saw her father, standing quietly all alone in the moonlight. The Garibaldino, big, erect, with his snow-white hair and beard, had a monumental repose in his immobility, leaning upon a rifle. She put her hand upon his arm lightly. He never stirred. "What have you done?" she asked, in her ordinary voice. "I have shot Ramirez in him," he answered, with his eyes directed to where the shade was blackest. "Like a thief he came, and like a thief he fell. The child had to be protected." He did not offer to move an inch, to advance a single step. He stood there, rugged and unstirring, like a statue of an old man guarding the honor of his house. Linda removed her trembling hand from his arm, firm and steady like an arm of stone, and, without a word, entered the blackness of the shade. She saw a stir of formless shapes on the ground, and stopped short. A murmur of despair and tears grew louder to her strained hearing. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.